Got car trouble?
Hold on to your lug nuts. It's time for an overhaul.
Now's the time to talk with Jerry on the Simmons Car Care Shop Talk Show.
Well, if you're one of the millions who own one of them gas-drinking, piston-clanking, air-polluting, smoke-belching four-wheel buggies from Detroit City, then pay attention. I'm about to sing your songs on.
All right, welcome back to the second hour of the Simmons Car Care Shop Talk Show right here on ESPN 1490 AM and 104.9 FM. Call number 719-1490. All right, we still have three family packs of tickets to go for this hour. You can start calling anytime you want to. I want to see 3, 4, and 5. Phone numbers, phone calls 3, 4, and 5, and let's get you these tickets. It's going to be one heck of a show, and you'll really enjoy it because it looks like the weather's going to be pretty nice, too. So, and that always works out. But on a Saturday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, unless it's snowing in Tucson. If it's snowing in Tucson, everybody's going to be out there playing in it anyway, so they'll be out to the racetrack.
Going to be making snowmen if that happens. That's what I'll be doing.
All right. We've covered, this is open lines. Give me a call down here. Get me out of trouble here. Me and Sam, we're just sitting here talking.
There's something to talk about.
And, well, we have a lot of stuff to talk about, but I've been in business for 44 years in June. I have talked automotive. This show has been running for 29 years. And we've only had one best of, and that was first show on ESPN because they didn't have a microphone set up.
Yep.
But the rest of it, I've heard just about every question. But the automotive industry is huge, absolutely huge. I noticed that a lot of the car companies now, like the Chevy Volt and the Impala is going away. And Ford has done away with all of their little stuff,
yep,
except for the Mustang and the pickups. So things change. Things change. And you really, it gets to be a pain to try to keep up with it.
Can't
they just leave it alone for at least maybe a year? Nope.
It's like new phones when they come out. It's like you can't go 6 months without there being a new model or a new version or something.
If my Dodge, my Ram that I just bought, gives me as much aggravation as my smartphone, I am going to trade that thing, and
yep,
I'm going to go get me a 56 Chevrolet.
That's a heartbeat right there.
Oh,
that's
my.
A heartbeat for you.
Oh.
Easy.
You just, and it updates on its own. The other thing is getting to be a little pain, too. Is the smart TVs.
Yes.
Smart TVs that decides you turn it off at night, and the next morning you get on, it wants you to watch Netflix or something like that.
Yep.
Then you've got to go get your other remote to try to figure out what are they talking about.
And you're wondering, how smart actually is this TV?
Yeah.
You know?
Two other TVs in the house, none of them harass me like that.
Nope.
And this one, then it'll say, it's time for your update. And then it'll come on. It flags down to bottom, and you keep cutting it off.
Yep.
Okay. It'll upgrade at the next break, so
yep,
you hit that button, and it does not. It's going to tell you the same thing the next morning.
I think I've had my upgrade button on my TV for over 2 years now. Like, I just have not clicked it, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
And it keeps telling you to come
every
on?
Every time.
You watch football with your...
With it. It takes about 45 seconds for that little sucker to go away, but once it does, it goes. But it's been on there for a while.
It's just like the lights on a car dash.
Exactly.
You know, that thing's been on so long. How long has it been on? I don't know. It's just been on a long time.
We'll
pull the code on it. I said, but the thing on the dash lights, on the mal indicator lights, or the ones that light up, You need to pay attention to those. Now they've got symbols. Let's say, okay, the light. Oh yeah, I come on and show you a little an oil dipstick.
Yeah.
Or it'll show you a coolant and stuff
that's
like that.
Specific.
Oh yeah, that's
wow.
Specific. They've come a long way, yeah. Baby. And but when that light comes on and it's blinking at you, that means that you only have that there is potential damage that is occurring at this time. You need to get it in and get it checked out before more damage is done.
Before it's too late.
And yeah, that's exactly right. So when the light is blinking, there's no amount of duct tape in the world that's going to keep that car safe.
You sure? You sure about that?
So you need to get it in and get a professional check it out for you. Or pull the codes on it and find out what it is. And then get it in and get it taken care of. Whatever you want to do, or however you want to do it. Because when it goes to lymph mode, it cuts your power down about 40%.
You don't want that.
And then all of a sudden you've got a vehicle and keep in mind, it's in lymph mode. You're supposed to limp into the garage. That's the reason, that's the breakdown maintenance that we're talking about. Most of the time when we get those, it's the preventive maintenance that would have prevented the breakdown maintenance. So, and trust me, preventive maintenance is a lot less expensive than breakdown maintenance. In other words, if you blow an engine, that's breakdown.
Causes a lot less stress, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can only think about that when you're in the situation and something breaks down and you're in the middle of wherever. You want to do that, you know, 2 weeks before you even get into that situation.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And the thing with your, like, you live out in Southern, your parents in Southern California, right?
Like Northern California Bay Area.
Northern California Bay Area.
Yep.
So when you're crawling, you fly out there most of the time now, right?
Yep. Got my car out here. My parents drove it out last February, but I fly back every time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Why, you chicken?
Yeah, I only got a 2-day weekend and with school. I don't think I could do a 15-hour drive. I'm not Jerry Simmons who can drive halfway across the country.
Yeah, but I take my time going across country.
Yeah, you do.
I don't drive quite as fast as I used to.
You got your little RV on it, so you got to go halfway.
Yeah, well, I'm interested in hooking that diesel up that RV and see if it pulls any better than that EcoBoost with twin turbos. I don't think it is because actually the EcoBoost has more horsepower than my diesel.
Really?
But it don't have the torque.
It does not.
And the torque is what you're looking for. But it does have almost 400 foot-pounds of torque in that little V6.
Be a good comparison, actually.
No.
No, to compare the two, that the one you have right now and then attaching it to your diesel.
Oh, as long as I've been towing, I'd have give my right arm for 350 horsepower.
Yep.
And 400 foot-pounds of torque. The only thing that I remember had any torque like that, other than a diesel back in the days, was a 460 Ford or a 429 had the heavy torque. But they're big blocks, and they get about 8-10 mile per gallon, something like that.
Why, what is this, a Hummer?
Yep. But the torque is what spoils us.
Yeah.
And if you own a diesel and you got rid of your diesel and because of fuel prices and you went to a gas burner, your later model stuff, there's not that much difference because you come off of torque and you go to horsepower. But in order to get to horsepower, even on that little
the Eco.
You've got to be cranking. You've got to get on up around 4,500 to 5,000 RPM because that's where the rating is made at.
Right.
And that's when you get your most power. And with the twin turbos, if you're pulling and you hit the mountain range and you drop a gear and say, okay, let's go.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I it's got all the measurements. And so I'm sure about halfway up the side of that mountain, they're going to come on and say, oh, you're overheating. Your EGTs is 1,400. Yeah, well, you've got to figure out some way to get off the road and cool that son of a gun down before you melt your turbochargers. So, other than that, it's a piece of cake.
Yeah.
But you get into air conditioning. You say your air conditioning, you've been waiting, you've had it topped off, and topped off doesn't work because it still leaks. Air conditioning is a sealed system. It does not leak. It's a sealed system. If it has to be topped off, when they're topping it off, have them put dye in the air conditioning and start looking for the leak. It may be a little leak, but it's still a leak. Anytime it's open system and it's designed to operate as a sealed system, there's going to be issues. What goes out can also get in. If you lose enough of that, and Brian's covered it a lot of times, you know, saying, hey, If you lose the Freon in it, which is just a slang word for propellant, just remember, it's only, some of them have a pound and a half. They used to be like 4 pounds.
Wow.
But they circulate the lubrication to the compressor and the internal components on this thing to keep it operating like it's supposed to. You lose the Freon, you lose the lubrication. There's where the damage is. Hey, if you'll sit there and sweat, that's all right. But you don't want to have to replace a $17, $18, $25, $26, $3,000 AC system because you've had a leak and you just keep adding a little bit, adding a little bit, adding a little bit, adding a little bit. And don't you dare put that sealant in that. You put that sealant in that, and I'll guarantee you, you're going to have to replace your system. Sealant will work. If you're dying of heat exhaustion and you have to put sealant in there, then do it. But the end results is going to be very expensive for you. Same thing on radiators, guys, ladies, people driving vehicles. If your sealant that goes into a cooling system is designed for emergencies only. In other words, if you've blown out, you've got a big crack in your radiator and you need to slow the son of a gun down because you're about 55 miles down in the boondocks and you need to get back to Tucson to your shop, then you can put sealant in there. I've carried a sealant in there. In fact, I had to change it out because it got so old because I didn't use it. It started to crack the plastic that it was housed in. You put the aluminum seal in there. When you get back to wherever you're out, you get that stuff out. You flush that system, back flush it any way you can get that the sealant out. Will it get you there? Yep. Is it designed to last? Well, I've seen it come in there where you've got to use a screwdriver to get it out of the heater core. So just to open it up so it'll even flow. So don't overdo it. And understand that the leak, your stop leak is designed the same way that your, what's the tire stuff? Yeah.
The tire
stuff. Your instant flat or
whatever
it is. You put that in there. Fix a flat. You put a fix flat in it. Fix a flat is designed to get you to a tire shop. It's not designed to run on it permanently. The only time you can put fix a flat in it and run on it permanently is like I did on my little tractor that runs around the house. Well, it's not going on the road. It only goes through the barn stalls and out to the dumpster and stuff like that. So, yeah, you can run this green slime in it or whatever else you want to run in it. That's a tractor. That's not what you're taking your hind end to work out on the freeway at 65 and 75 miles an hour. And when you go into the shop, please tell your technician, your service writer at the tire shop or wherever you go to get this thing fixed, I have fix-a-flat in it, I have green slime in it, because this stuff is very flammable. And it don't take but a spark, and it makes a big mess. So, and it also damages the tire pressure monitoring system. When you put that stuff in, trust me, it is for a temporary fix to get you to a tire shop. Do not forget that, please. Let's discuss this little donut tire that you don't have anymore. When you buy a vehicle or you get ready to hit the road, you're going to say you're Sam and you're going to San Francisco and you're going to drive because you got more than 2 days. You get ready to hit that road. Everything in the world, it seemed like if somebody drops a hay hook like I hit with a dually one time and it took out the inside dual, you don't want to change that. It's kind of rough. But if you do change it, a can of fix flat won't do that. You kind of need another spare. So you can go by someplace like Jeff's and Jeff's Auto Salvage. Talk to Pat over there and tell him, okay, I need a spare tire. I'm getting ready to go. And you put that spare tire in the trunk. Then you've got a spare tire that you can put on it. Even the little round donut tires are designed for 50 miles. You're supposed to go 50 miles and get them changed. I've seen guys run around town on for a year. crazy looking. But, hey, if it works around town, around town, you're okay.
Yeah.
But get a tire the same size as the one you got on your vehicle. Throw it in the trunk. When you get back off your vacation, pull it out of the trunk, put it back inside your garage, in your carport, whatever. But at least you've got a tire to get you out of a jam out on the side of the road. Fix-A-Flat will not fix a tire that's blown off of the rim. It's impossible. It can't do it. So That'll save you a little bit too. But you can go down to the dealer and you can buy a brand new tire and a brand new matching rim. Or I'd go over to Jeff's, talk to Pat, and ask Pat, can you find me a spare tire? And if he don't know where there's one at, he can probably still find you one. Get you a good rim, get you a good tire on iron, check the dates on it, make sure it's still good, and get you a spare tire. And then, and also, you may want to check your jack, your lug wrenches, and make sure that that's in. Because to be honest with you, I don't know why they would give you a can of fix a flat and a jack.
Yeah.
So get a jack. If you're using a rolling jack like we use in the shop, you can get these little quarter-ton jacks. All of that stuff works pretty good in emergency as long as you got a good platform to set it on. Dirt does not qualify as a good platform. That's the ones where you push the jack almost underground before it ever starts moving up, and then it'll wobble, and it's not a safety.
It's just too unsturdy.
It's not right.
Yeah.
So if you're going to get a floor jack, remember, you've got to get something that's low enough to go under the vehicle. That's the reason these little scissor jacks, they go down to about a 3-inch total height. And then you get you a little block of wood. You can get them, you can go down to Home Depot and get them out there where they saw this stuff up and make these, cut these chunks. Get you a little chunk of wood. You can go a 3/4 plywood. I'd make it about an 8x8 and put it in a trunk. Make sure you got a jack, even if you have to go buy one of these little screw jacks that'll get under the car. You need something that'll go under the car. True story. My brother comes out here from Chesapeake, Virginia. He's towing. He's got a big motor home, and he's towing a Honda CR-V on one of these little tow dollies. He hits a 4x4 that's turned sideways, about a 16-inch 4x4, and it jams up against a construction wall, and it comes right back under his little tow dolly and pops the wheel, the tire, off of the rim. It hit it exactly below the rim and popped the tire. He gets his little jack out there. Well, guess what? He's got an inch off of the ground to do this. And so when AAA got out to get his butt off the road, I mean, not AAA, but another one that Highway Patrol sent to him, the guy comes in and he's got a pry bar and a little block of wood, and he just picks it up with a pry bar. And then he puts the regular jack under it, and then he takes it on up. And John said, 10 minutes, I'm out and running again.
Goes from there.
But he didn't have a can of fix-it flat. He had a spare tire to go on there. Mm-hmm. Rolls into Tucson. Sure enough, it had broken the firewall, the inside sidewall on his tire that he was running on the thing. So we looked at the rim. We spun it up, and it was wobbling. So he had to buy a rim and a tire. Mm. But he was able to get out because he had the spare tire. So the story is, the six P's, proper preparation prevents P, poor performance. Be prepared when you go out. Do the old Boy Scout thing. Make sure that you got it all together. All right, AC service. Covered a little bit about the AC service. I want to cover some more. It's wintertime. It's off season, correct? Everybody knows it's off season.
Oh, it is.
Except I've turned on my AC. I've got climate control, and it come on yesterday.
Yep.
I'm going, wow.
What?
Well, you've got the windshield heating inside of the cabin up, so you're going to have a little bit of AC. The other thing you can do is when you get in it, you can roll the windows down about 3 inches on each side and drive it down the road, and it'll clear out pretty quick. But off-season, they have time to do it. Your favorite shop. I'm sure that the ones of it's had AC problems. You're probably like the rest of it. You think about it and say, well, I put an additive in it. Well, I topped it off. I topped it. And you're making excuses again. We all do it. It's normal.
We're human.
When you go in the wintertime, you've got your tax return back, or you've got some extra cash, and say, okay, I'm going to hold my breath. I'm going to take that thing into Mr. Test first. Don't guess. He's going to check that son of a gun out and tell you exactly what you need to fix. Then you can look at your tax return or your 401k. It depends on how long you've been running it low. And it'll give you a way to go. And then when you get your air conditioning fixed and there are no leaks, then you've got a system that's running. The thing that scares me is that you can't run that thing low on lubricant for overextended periods of time because you will have damage. You may go in and say, okay, well, this is the deal. We'll take a chance on your compressor, because based on the information that you give me, you've been topping it off about 3 years. So I can't predict metal fatigue or metal failure inside of a system. So we can do it. We can fix it all back up. We can stop the leaks on it. But keep in mind, I don't know the condition of your compressor. It may last indefinite. It may last 30 days. It may last a week. I can't predict metal fatigue and metal failure once you lose the lubricant on it. So if you keep that in mind, go ahead and get your AC fixed during the wintertime when you can afford it and you don't need it that much. You'll be good to go. All right, let's go to Bill. Bill, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. I'm glad I finally found you.
You and probably about, let's see, we've had about 60 phone calls and people walking in the office. So
yeah,
I'm doing the best I can to get this information out.
Well, I've been listening to you a long time, and I know your opinion on what you read on the Internet, but I wanted to talk a little bit about zinc. How much do you add when you do an oil change?
You're trying to pin me down, huh?
No.
On the zinc, yeah. I wouldn't think you'd need, if you do an oil change, what capacity? How many quarts you have?
Five quarts.
I would use five teaspoons full. They should have it on the bottle what the additive is. But the reason I said five teaspoons for a five oil change is because they only have a teaspoon of conditioner put in a quart of oil. So I'm thinking, okay, they took the zinc out. You may be able to get away with a half teaspoon per quart. I don't have that info. I don't even know anybody's got that information, but I can check it out. But if it were mine, and I'm a gambler, I think, okay, well, let's see. I know there's one teaspoon per quart. So what I would do, are you running synthetic?
Semi-synthetic, like a high mileage or a max life.
What do you got? What kind of vehicle are we putting this in?
You're not going to believe me.
Yeah, I will.
1968 Plymouth Roadrunner.
Want to trade? I got a 68 Mustang.
No, I'm keeping it.
All right, now, I assume that you've built the engine and it's in good shape.
The engine is tight. It's in good shape. It was rebuilt 9 years ago.
How many miles you put on since then? Do you drive it just car shows?
Basically. It's got probably less than 12,000 miles in 10 years.
Yeah. Well, the semi-synthetic, the reason I'm nervous with the semi-synthetic, I can't get anybody to tell me what the blend is. Okay.
15%
synthetic put in that?
Yep.
Okay.
If you use Max Life oil,
uh-huh.
I called them.
Uh-huh.
They said, well, it's a proprietary formula, but let's just say it's around 15% synthetic. That's what they've told me.
That's more information I could get out of those suckers. well, you're running, all right, so 15%. I'd start with about probably a half a teaspoon per quart of just zinc. Okay. And I do know a guy that may help me get that information. If do, tune in next week and I'll give you the real answer. But like I said, I'm a gambler and zinc. I never could find anything really wrong with that. It works pretty good. It's a lot.
I agree. But it's like I know your opinion on what you read on the internet.
No, it's good information.
Too much zinc would actually cause corrosion.
Yeah. Huh? What?
Too much zinc.
Yeah.
Will actually cause corrosion.
Yep.
So
that's true.
You know. Quick question: do you know whatever happened to Don Cott and Tucson Frame and Body?
He retired.
Oh, he did.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he
retired and just closed the shop.
Yep.
Okay.
And he just went away. He used to be a sponsor of my son's race car. He'd fix the frames, one of the best frame shops in Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah, I'm kind of sorry he closed up.
Oh, I am too. I am too. Miss him a lot. I haven't seen him in about a year. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, I'm glad I found your show, and thanks for talking about zinc.
Well, If you put too much in it, that's the reason. I'll tell you, you know, without knowing what the original, maybe you call that guy that says, what do you think about zinc? How much zinc was in the original quart?
Well, Max Life Oil has about 800 ppm of zinc.
Parts per million.
Now, if you go back to the 80s, uh-huh. An original quart of oil had anywhere from 1,100 to 2,000, depending on the brand.
All right, 11. How does that interpret as far as a teaspoon?
I have no. I thought maybe you'd know that.
I've got a brother who's an engineer back on the East Coast, and he's going to be glad. Once he hears this podcast, he'll probably call and tell me what that formula is, because he is an engineer, and that guy can figure out anything.
Well, then so, I'll be listening next Saturday.
Yeah, well, he'll probably pick it up and be calling me for next Saturday, and I can call him and ask him and see what it is. I have one more source, too, I'm thinking about calling, because that's a good question. You know, I know that some of your Max Life oils and stuff, I know some of the zinc went back in it, but I don't know what portion of the 15% synthetic that they actually put the zinc in. I don't know what's what. You know, they just have proprietary information, as you say.
Yeah, well, and when I called them, they basically said, oh, for your car, you don't have to add it. You've got 800 parts per million. That's enough. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but again, going back to the folklore that's on the internet, right. Everybody's adding zinc to their old
cars.
Detroit, Mopars and Detroit iron.
Yep.
So,
Well, I've heard the rumble.
Thank you very much.
I hear the rumble. I just don't have I don't know how that 11,000 parts per million translates into a teaspoon. I do know that they added a teaspoonful of additive per quart of oil. I was told that years ago by the manufacturers. And that makes sense. That's the reason we do the additional MOA from BG Chemicals, and we get the oil stabilizers. We improve on what they used to have. But now that the oils and the engine requirements and the engine tolerances are a lot closer than what the old detroit iron was, then they come up with their own formulas now. And you still have to add the other stuff if you drive any older vehicles. But you can't put 50 weight in something that calls for 0-20.
No.
It don't work.
I just use the 1030 Max Life or high mileage, and I've been doing it for a while, so
you're okay.
Hopefully I'm good.
You're okay. It's good stuff.
Thank you very much.
All right, Bill. Have a good weekend.
All righty. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. 719-1490 as the clock ticks on. Oh, my goodness, it's 7:30. We only got 30 minutes. So if you got a question or a comment, you know, get on the phone.
Continue the conversation.
Be happy to chat with you. Got a question or a comment, you know, get on the phone.
Continue the conversation.
Be happy to chat with you.
Absolutely.
You know, now let's go back to the air conditioning thing. You've already covered the leaks. If you're topping it off, get it fixed. They're not supposed to leak. It's like a battery. A battery don't leak on top. So if you've got debris coming up on top of a battery, get it checked out and find out. Do you have an overcharge issue on your alternator? Or is the battery defective or is it getting old? Batteries go 24 to 30 months is what the average life on a battery in the early model cars because of systems and wear and tear on the system that you are actually trying to work. In Arizona, we use the air conditioning I think we use it more than anybody in the country. So that's if you good. Do that, it's going to put an additional load on it. So check your batteries. You don't have to be a rocket scientist. You can open the hood and look at it. If it's got liquid on top of the plastic, it's not supposed to be there. So next time you have your oil serviced, if it's running all right, but if the battery is 3 years old, 3 years old, most of your batteries that you get in these new vehicles. Now I'm going to give you what they should do, and I'm going to tell you what actually happened. They should last about 36 to 48 months on a new battery. If you live in Tucson, Arizona, if you live in Mount Airy, North Carolina, better known as Mayberry, it will probably last up to 5 years, depending on where it's stored, how much it's used, if it's used enough to keep the charge up in it on a daily basis to keep it up to full charge, All of that is players, but you can get up to 5 years. My dad did it. All right, now, in Tucson, Arizona, my wife has a 2017 Ford EcoBoost. There's 16,000 miles on it. That big battery come out there, and I'm not kidding you. I've seen Caterpillar batteries. It's no bigger than that battery, but because it's got that start-stop. You pull it up to a stoplight, it goes dead. And being from a mechanical background, I'm going, how many starts can this poor battery handle? Then I find out the later model ones that are coming out with a start-stop have two starters. I'm going, how in the world do you do that? And that I will research and bring it back to the program because that's fascinating to me. It has a flywheel. Flywheel cranks it. How many different starters have you got sitting on that flywheel is my question, and I haven't had the privilege of finding out yet. All right, let's go to Pat. Pat, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Good morning.
How are you?
Good. You were just discussing earlier the first hour about drive shafts. I want to add something else that's potential vibration, too, when you're talking about two-piece, like, and I did it when I did my first clutch, and I think everybody's may have done it on a pickup truck and whatever had two-piece drive shaft, is in phasing where you line your U-joints up.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't line them up and they're not what they call in phase, or they're not in cross, then the one action of the U-joint will work against the other, and you'll feel that rumble or vibration.
Yep.
So if you do a clutch or do a job and don't put the drive shaft in correctly, that'll certainly be one source of your vibration if you don't have those things phased. So I always advise, and I'm sure you guys do too, is just put a line across the slip yoke and the spline before you take it apart. In most cases, you really shouldn't have to any if you're doing that kind of work to begin with, because you just drop it from the carrier bearing.
And also on that, staying with this same thing, we see it come in, and you'll have a blind spline on the spline.
Exactly. The newer ones do that.
Yep. And some of the older ones did it. But we also found that some of the older ones were phased 90 degrees out. And then when people change them, they sit there and scratch their head and going, oh, this is not right. I mean, we even did it. But when we rebuild one, it has a worn-out spline on it, which we can do. We'll change it. We will phase it. We will balance it to the new phasing. And then we will put two stickers on that son of a gun, one on the yoke, one on the drive shaft. It tells you exactly. You match up the arrows, and life is good. So you are absolutely correct.
Well, I just want to bring that up because I know it frustrated me that one time, and it was many years ago I did it, and I know a lot of people have been through the frustration. So if I can save them that fun of excitement, because there's nothing worse than doing a really good job on something mm-hmm. and then having another problem arise because of something you didn't know about.
Yep. The welded-in yoke has to go the same direction down, and I just tell them, if you will just point the welded-in yokes to the ground and look under the vehicle and see if it's lined up from the one in the back to the one in the front to the ones that go into the slip yoke, it goes into the transmission.
Right.
If those three are lined up, you're good to go. The other problem, if they don't look for the torque twist on the earlier models, because if you have a diesel or you get stuck in the mud and all of a sudden you're spinning and you come out and you hit the blacktop, and then it will twist the spline on the back shaft that goes into the yoke. It'll twist that thing, and it don't have to be off of about 2 or 3 degrees, and then that'll create your vibration. And unless you've been there and done that, you won't even know it.
Well, I would see. That's one thing. When you talk about these torque figures, and I don't want to hold up any longer, but when you talk about these torque figures, I have to wonder what kind of driveline is going to hold up to that. Because if you get somebody that really is really kind of liberal with the gas pedal and really loves the power of it, I would think you could really do some serious transmission and drive shaft damage in a faster order if you're really kind of not common sensed with it.
Absolutely. That's what keeps everybody in business.
The
drive lines, though, Joe builds performance drive lines for NASCAR dragway. Dragways are, oh, my God, I don't see how those things even hold in there.
Oh, I agree.
He builds those things, and they come off the line. The front end stands up on these vehicles, and I'm going, oh. And you're sitting there because you know Joe just built that drive shaft. And you go, oh, I hope it don't come out on the track because it's got a Simmons sticker on it, too. But it's amazing how you can build them. Wade built one for a 206-mile-an-hour pro comp at the drag strip out of Colorado. Mm-hmm. And he built it out of 256-wall tubing. And the drive shaft was only 28 inches long. That sucker must have weighed a ton. And the guy loved it. He said, there's no shaking at 206 mile an hour. And he just raved. And that son of a gun, you almost needed a forklift to take it out of the driveshaft shop and put it out there. Didn't blow it up.
But as long as you put it in once and it stays together and holds up for the duration and you just keep the things greased, then that's the best way to have them.
Well, you have to go with the volume. You get into these tubes and guys say, well, it keeps twisting. Well, step up the tube size and step up the tube circumference. 4-inch drive shafts are hard to bend when you're sitting there with a 120 wall tubing.
Well, I didn't even think of it. Yeah, I guess what you're saying is the fatter the tubing, the greater the torque and power it's going to take.
Right. It distributes the torque around the yokes and stuff better.
Well, like I said, I know you've seen and I've seen some spectacular drive shaft failures. So you can really imagine.
they don't go too very well when the drive shaft lands in a freeway.
Precisely.
100,000 miles, they need to be inspecting them. I don't care what kind of vehicle you're driving. If it's 100,000 miles, you get the U-joints inspected.
Well, like I told Joy this week, he's going to be seeing me about another couple of weeks to get the front drive shaft finally down my yellow Ford, and then I'll have that thing all dialed in. So.
Oh, good.
Well, Jerry, always a pleasure, and thanks again.
Hey, thanks much.
My pleasure. Take care.
All right, bye-bye. Yep, drive shafts is a hidden specialty. All right, let's go to Kevin. Kevin, good morning. Welcome to the show.
How you doing, sir?
Doing well, Kevin. How are you?
Not too bad. I have two quick questions. I got an 06 Chevy Silverado pickup truck, and it does reduced engine power. When you pull the code on it, it says throttle circuit AB. When you do the research on that, that was like the throttle body.
Yeah.
Replace the throttle body, it still throws the code.
Uh-huh.
So the other problem that could be was the gas pedal. So I replaced the gas pedal. Well, then it threw a third code that said C circuit on throttle something. So that led me to the little brain that's in between the throttle pedal and the throttle body. Replaced that. Still does it. Did a voltage drop across the wiring harness. That checked out. I did a resistance check on the wire harness. And I found a couple pins that were a little corroded, so we cleaned them up. But every now and then it still does.
Still throws a code indicating throttle body? Which code does it throw, the throttle body?
When we looked at it through the scanner, that's what it led us to.
Okay. When you purchased the throttle body and you put it on there, did you get it for that exact model with the VIN code? You're breaking?
Probably not.
Okay.
I bought a remanufactured one from I can't remember exactly where, but it was like an AutoZone O'Reilly type place.
That would scare me a little bit. My son changed the throttle body on his 90 GMC, and he went to a 383, so he stepped up the size of the throttle body. It's been about 5 years, and we just have to tolerate it because it still acts plumb stupid because the computer wasn't able to adjust to the new throttle body on it. If you're getting a throttle body and you had the code before you changed the throttle body, you change the throttle body, and then it throws another code. Well, the throttle body is all monitored by their little computer in 06, so now we have a little issue. It sounds like you got something that you need to get in. What side of town are you on?
Northwest.
Northwest? Go by Mr. Test First, Don't Guess. He's the best nose picker I've ever seen in my life of tracking these suckers out to the nth degree.
Okay. Well, I'll have to go over there and see him.
Automotive specialist.
Where we've got it, that's where it only does it, when it... there is really no rhyme or reason when it does it.
Okay.
It's very far and few in between, but it's one of those things we're just living with because bought and paid for a truck, and other than that, it runs good.
Well, you're coming in so bad I can't hardly hear you now. But what I would do, Kevin, is take that in to Brian or give him a call and see what he thinks. But with what you've done, he's going to need to see what was done in order to know if it's working like it should. And trust me, the guy has more diagnostic equipment than the manufacturers. He's good.
Well, thank you, sir.
All right, buddy. Have a good weekend. Incredible. Incredible. Yeah, we can fix these things. We can go now. YouTube, internet, YouTube, information. I can give you my computer, and you can sit down and go in there and pull up the factory manufacturer's book on repairs. Well, everything that they do, we can fill it out. We can find it out. I can let you spend a day on that thing and send you out of there. When you get to actually putting your fingers on the job, things change. Maybe you have a pack rat that's been visiting you and you don't know it. Nothing is for certain. The internet is information. A book is information. It's how you interpret that information that makes the difference. If you're not a technician and you don't do it for a living, it's going to appear simple and become complicated, especially when you do everything that it says, and you probably need one of those three things that it actually set a code to, because you've got a system in there that tries to override a system. Okay? So all of this needs to be sorted out. And if I had Kevin's problem like that, other than taking it to my shop, I'd take it over to Brian. If I lived over on the northwest side, I'd take it over to Brian Fuller at Automotive Specialist, and I'd let Brian take a look at this thing and find out what the heck is going on, because he's one of the best diagnostic technicians in the country. And, yeah, he's a buddy, but that's the reason I don't have to go to IATN except on special occasions, like if we have it for the next day, and then we will leave it overnight. We'll post it on IATN. Next morning, we got about 25 from the manufacturers all the way to Sweden and every place else that's answered up on it, which makes it work great. Automotive Specialist is located at 3611 West Ina Road in a Bookman's Plaza. Brian's personal cell number is 237-3852. His business phone is 572-1734. Or you can Google test first, don't guess. Believe it or not, he's there. His website is automotivespecialistaz.com. Automotivespecialistaz.com. Or I think I'm going to have him on the radio program next week and you can call back with your questions. So, Kevin, if you don't get any answers by next weekend, you can call back and talk to Brian and he's going to tell you you're going to have to bring it in, because something that changed like that, he needs to see what the values are. He needs to hook it up to his equipment and see, and he'll hook it up to probably three or four different things, and then he can nail it down for you. And then if you want to fix it, he'll let you go ahead and fix it. But at least you'll know what it is. And the Columbus method that's worked not so very good so far, well, a little bit, but I suspect the throttle body itself, but that's without ever seeing it or ever seeing any flow charts or any of that. So that's what I would do if I were you. Merle's Automotive, they have the good stuff, but when you're dealing with throttle bodies, if you don't order it by VIN number, because they go to different size engines, they have the V6 engine, they have the V8 engines, they have the big V8 engines, and one throttle body does not service all of them. There's a difference in flow rates. Lenz Auto Brokers. If you're looking for a good car, good used car, or you don't know what you're looking for, you might want to go to LenzAutoBrokerage.com. Pull it up on a website. Phone number is 628-7500. 628-7500. The address is 2101 North Stone Avenue. If you go to the website, you can see what's in inventory on the website. If you spot something you like, you can go down and kick a tire if you want to, or you can, it's got all the details on the postings of the vehicle anyway. It's got a lot of good pictures. That'll tell you pretty much what you're looking at before you go down there. But if you just want to go out and kick a few tires, go down there and see what he's got. If you're moving from a certain size vehicle, and let me emphasize this, if you're moving to a truck and you say, I want something that's small and gets good gas mileage, that truck, when you open the door, you sit down in the seat. You sit over and down in the seat, most of them. If you open a little Honda Civic, and you open the door and you sit down in that Honda Civic after driving your truck for the last 12.1 years, when you sit down in it, just remember, you got to get up. And when you open the door and you step out, your knees are about chin level, and then you have to stand up. So go down. If you're thinking about going to a smaller car, go to where they've got a selection of used smaller cars and see which one actually fits and feels the best, because it's hard to go from a pickup truck down to the little cars. When I went from a diesel and picked up a CRV to go along because, one, it's easier to drive in Tucson and parks a lot easier. But I found that the seat height on that is fine. I can get out of it, in it, out of it, and I don't have Burma knuckles on the asphalt or anything like that. So that's just a little tip when you're buying a vehicle. And don't buy the vehicle for today. Buy the vehicle for what you think you're going to need 2 years down the road or 3 years down the road. If that's your secondary vehicle, you may be driving it not quite as much as primary, and it'll probably last you a while. But you need to be comfortable in it or you will not like it. You will be looking to get out of it pretty quick. If you can't ride from here to Phoenix and still get out and feel your legs, you're wrong vehicle, okay? And that depends on your size, your physical size also. If you're 6'4", you're never going to be happy with a little Honda unless you just say, oh, yeah, this is the greatest thing in the world. Wrong. Not the little Civic. You'll wind up going to the SUVs. That's why the manufacturers are cutting away some of the Impalas, the Volts, and stuff like that, is because the SUVs, people find out that, hey, you can get a lot more stuff piled in them. You can get in and out of the seat. They're easy to maneuver in parking lots. You can see. I rented a little Nissan Civic, no, Sentra, when I was back in Virginia a couple of years ago. And that was one of the best running little cars I've ever set my hind end in. And it was comfortable.
Just simple.
Yeah.
Simple, comfortable, easy.
Yeah.
Yep.
And when I got ready to get out of it, I couldn't hardly move as far as getting out of it.
Yeah.
It sat comfortable. I was just comfortable when sitting in it. I didn't know there was an issue until I got ready to get out of it. I thought, oh, okay, that's the reason the SUVs are becoming more popular. And people just want a little bit bigger vehicle so they can look at something besides bumper guards and hubcaps and see over the ones in front. That's one of the reasons that trucks are so popular in Tucson. Your vision, you're easier seen and you can see. So keep that in mind as you go down to Lynn's Auto Brokers and tell them, or you look at a website, but just don't go buy the first thing you see. Make sure that that's what you're looking for. And because you're going to, if you buy a new vehicle, like I bought a vehicle, you're going to spend quite a chunk of cash on these things. But you might as well get what's comfortable for you and what you feel comfortable in as far as safety. These little cars, they have some safety equipment in. There's a point of view out there that says, oh, the bigger the car, the safer it is. No, they're not. Had the Honda. Hondas were designed, even the little Honda Civics were designed, probably still are. The crash ratings on them is good. Where you hit a front-end collision, and the whole front end folds down and under you, protecting the cabin where the people are at. You know, your rider, you, and anybody you have in a car. And I've seen some horrendous crashes on these little Hondas, and the cabin is still intact. And the front end is down about 2 foot lower than where it originally started. And, I mean, it rolls the engine down under it. So these things... Don't just go buy a great big car thinking it's a lot safer than a little one, because keep in mind that great big car is going to weigh probably 1.5 to 2 times more than that little one, so you got that centrifugal force that you have to deal with also. So when you go buy a vehicle, do a little due diligence. And when you're buying your kid a car to go to college, check it out. My kids, when they went to college, they're going to have something safe. I don't care if he gets 5 mph. I don't care if it gets 35 mph. Well, yeah, I do, because I pay for that too. However, I want them safe. And most of these vehicles right now, you can look at the safety rating on it and say, okay, now I'll go from there. And kids are a lot more flexible than we senior citizens. And when they get ready to get out of the car, they can actually jump right out and they're ready to go. When you get older, all that stuff comes into play. So, what you may like now, you may not like in 2 years or 3 years. Keep in mind, the average people, the consumers keeping these vehicles 12.1 years because of the price of them. And they run longer now. They're actually a better vehicle than my 56 Chevrolet was. And I've already figured that out easy. You can continue to drive and drive and drive, and life is good. But don't be in a hurry. Take your time. If you're buying a new vehicle, I will tell you one thing. Buy it now. Those prices that they were trying to get everybody to buy in November and December, well, they carried over to January. And there are some good prices on 2018 brand new vehicles now, regardless of the dealership. You can wheel and you can deal and get what you want. But make sure you get the insurance coverage, the warranty. Make sure you get the extended warranty on them. And when you go with the extended warranty, make sure you get someone to explain exactly what it don't, I mean exact, what it don't cover. I bought a Dodge in 2006. First thing I had about a month out of it was a blend door operation. Found out that the blend door is considered normal operation and normal breakage parts. Really? First time I'd heard about it, and I've owned vehicles quite a while. However, that was one of the warranty stipulations. Shame on me for not knowing that. So we bought it, took it to the shop, bought the part, took it to my shop, had them put it in, and it's been fine ever since. Turned out that there was an update on that particular part. I'm going, really? Well, that means it was a factory screw-up to start with. Nope, it's a normal part. It just breaks on its own.
Love it.
Heads up, buddies, heads up. And when you go into the car dealership and you buy one of these bigger, more expensive trucks, Ford, Chevy, I don't care, GMC, whatever you buy, Chrysler, Ram, when you get those things and they get ready with a warranty, hold your breath, get you a glass of water, because they're slightly more expensive than they were in 2006 when I bought one for the 06 diesel. So find out what it covers it. If it doesn't cover the major components, you really might not want to get it. But make sure you know what it covers. The package they presented to me had three different coverages. I got the top one. I said, I don't want any surprises. These vehicles are made better. They last longer. But what if? What if at 90,000 miles I need to replace the transmission? All that money that I spent for that warranty is coming right back to me. So that's the reason for that. But people will buy a lot of things just because it has a warranty on it, like a vehicle. Oh, yeah, it's got a 30-day warranty. Oh, yeah, well, I can get a 3-year, 36,000-mile warranty on this vehicle, and that is really good, and so you're in the fourth year. Or you're in the third year. A warranty is a complement to a good vehicle or a good job. It shouldn't be the sole basis for that, because I've never seen a warranty pull a boat out of a lake. It don't do it. I've never seen a warranty load this truck up on the bed of a wrecker. It's a piece of paper. So when you're buying it, buy a good product, do the research on them, and you know, Consumer Reports is a good place to go, unless you're looking for my 06 Dodge, and it says don't buy it. And I'm going, why? 204,000 miles? Yeah, I replaced the transmission at about 84, something like that. Well, when I had it pulled out and rebuilt, I had it rebuilt like Jasper Engine did. I put the good parts in the back end of it so it'd stay together, and it's still together and still running fine. But make sure that you read the fine print on this. Warranties, you want to find out what it doesn't cover. And I mean pay attention to the doesn't cover when you're spending your hard-earned money, because the warranty is not going to be inexpensive. It'll be well worth it if you ever need it, but it's just like life insurance. You got to die to collect it. But on warranty, at least if you have a vehicle and it quits, you can collect it. Okay? So just heads up when you go to buy warranties. Check them out. Check them out. They're not all the same. Trust me. Mike, that most of you know, that used to be my service manager before he retired, he had a book, had a little black box, and he called it his little black box. And he had made up little cards on the warranties that he absolutely refused to work on a customer's vehicle. If they had that, they are responsible for it, then they can go after the warranty company. And so, and he'd pass that information out once a week minimum. And because there's some, we were working on a GM that was, warranty was sold by General Motors this few years back. And we were halfway through working on this GM car that was like a $2,200 bill that had been approved by this insurance company that was extended warranty through GM. And they went bankrupt before we got the next day after we got the approval, except we didn't find out about it until the guy went to put his claim in. So You know, you need to do a little due diligence and check them out with the Better Business Bureau, see if they got any complaints about it. The resources are there. If you take the time, you can find out this information on them. Google it. Find out how long they've been in business, what they got to offer. Find out how the pricing structure is compared to the other ones. And find out what they cover, what they don't cover. I know a guy that bought a car in Phoenix, and this was, oh man, this must have been 20 years ago. And he was driving back to Tucson, lost a motor. Guess what his warranty didn't cover?
The motor.
The motor. Hmm. Motor, powertrain.
One out of 1 million parts of a car it doesn't cover, of
yep.
course.
And he'd have been better off just by the engine coverage, by the transmission coverage, the different running gear coverage, and he'd have been good to go. The other one that'll eat you lunch is if you buy a car and it has an AC problem.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's no problem. It was topped off. And then you have to replace the entire thing. Ford used to have something called the Black Death. The compressor would blow up. It would shoot little, look like rubber pellets through the entire system. It was called Black Death.
Sounds terrible.
That's exactly what that thing was to that system. Black Death, you change everything. You change everything, you flush it, you hope like a Dickens you can get what out. That's after you changed it all. Then you got to flush out, make sure all the lines were flushed. Everything needed to be replaced on a Black Death because the oils that were hanging inside the lines that we used to transport and that had leaked out into the lines, the seal system, and you pull it apart, flush it out, and here's these little teeny weeny black balls on it, and you go, oh my gosh, now I know why you call it Black Death, because it won't go through the exchangers, nothing. It just stops everything. And it's the gift that keeps on giving. If you don't do it right, people who do AC service, if that system is not flushed independently, the lines independently flushed and all of that, you can have a big issue. So when you get your air conditioning fixed, make sure that the people that are doing it, you know, you check them out. And don't be bashful to ask the question. Just ask the question. And please don't use that sealant. Oh, my goodness gracious alive. Yeah, I know it sounds good. It's inexpensive as all get out, and you're going to say, I'm going to sell it anyway. And so you're going to put it in there. And lo and behold, it cools down so good, and by golly, there's no reason to sell it. So you're going to keep it until it finally breaks loose, and then you have to replace the entire system. Well, it's been fun. For the ones of you that have that didn't get the tickets today, next weekend's going to be too late, but that's all right. We tried. We've already given away like 10 of them anyway. So until next week, God bless, drive safe, have a good one. And you can get the podcast.